Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 9th of December, recording at 7:49 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. And in terms of stock markets over the last week and a bit, it could be said that what Japan giveth, it also taketh away and giveth back again. In other words, Japan is the market everybody's talking about here right now, so it has a big psychological influence on what goes on elsewhere. And just as, was it at the beginning of the week or the end of last week, I can't remember, but when Japan suddenly surged up at a time, investors were having a bit of a nervous wobble in other markets, that caused them to all regain confidence and to perform really, really quite well, led by Japan, of course. And the spotlight on Japan is given even better long-term stories, such as India, a chance to take a breather here. But then Japan wobbled yesterday, and we saw some follow-through selling pressure around Asia and certainly in the United States. But here we go again, Japan with a pretty good day offsetting most of yesterday's declines, and we've got a firmer tone in stock markets generally. And we also had a new high today on the India Nifty and Sensex Index. Government bonds treading water within the lower region of their overall top formation, that's long-dated government bonds. And if we look at currencies, well, the dollar has looked a bit limp in here. And remember, legions are long the U.S. dollar, particularly against the Japanese yen, and desperately keen to keep that trend going a little bit longer. And it has been a stunning week for gold and silver, all precious metals really, but it's been the gold and silver show that's really been the big one. Very, very impressive action, maybe a bit overbought right now. And in the petroleum sector, more evidence that that oil has bottomed, but it may well take its sweet time in terms of establishing some port down here at these levels. But natural gas, again, a stellar performance, roared up into new high ground last night and again today before falling back quite sharply. Looks like an upside failure there, so I'm glad to be on the sidelines, glad to have booked those profits in the last 2 or 3 days. Okay, now, big picture, long-term outlook for stock markets. You know my view. I think this technical bull within Wall Street's secular bear. Now, sometimes I get people saying to me, oh, you're saying that stock markets are all in a secular bear trend. I've said nothing of the kind. I've said Wall Street's in a secular bear trend, long defined by me is a generational long process of valuation contraction. That means lower PE ratios overall and rising yields. Now, Wall Street has gone a very long way towards narrowing the gap in terms of valuations. That doesn't mean that the secular bear market is over. They tend to go on for really quite a long time. If they can go along for 15, 13, 14, 15, 20 years. So I think that will persist, but again, whether that means a downtrend for markets or a broad multi-year trading range will depend a lot on how much liquidity is sloshing around the system and how the overall economy works. Liquidity functions. Liquidity tends to cushion the downside risk, and if the economy is growing reasonably well and Wall Street has been doing that, I think we can all conclude, even allowing for hedonic reporting, then you get a situation where corporate profits growth brings down the multiples, and also companies are able to increase dividends, and they have been doing that. Do you remember the fashion towards the end of the 19, or towards the latter 1990s, that dividends were an inefficient use of capital? Well, this time around, people are saying, "Show me the money," and are asking for those dividends and receiving them where companies can afford to pay them. So that's not at all bad, a bad environment for investors, but because of the secular bear market, there are far better opportunities elsewhere in other markets, and that's really one of the major fuller money themes in here. But all markets have to pay attention to, or investors in all other markets should pay attention to what Wall Street is doing because of that Wall Street leash effect that I have so often mentioned. In other words, when Wall Street's firm, let alone clearly rising, then the leash is let out, and other stock markets that have f far better stories in terms of valuations and/or growth can go romping ahead. And conversely, when Wall Street takes fright, then the leash is retracted, and some of those markets, many of those, eventually all of those markets, other markets will fall quite sharply. Uncoupling doesn't occur, if only because Europe slavishly adheres to the broad trend that we see on Wall Street, can vary over the medium term, of course, and is usually a high beta version of Wall Street. But the fact that it does very closely follow the same broad overall trends means that Americans and European investors are usually pushing money out of their countries and regions at the same time, and also bringing it back in as they turn cautious at the same time. Thus the workings of the leash effect. And there's so much I could talk about. I don't want to digress too much on these points, although they are important to touch on from time to time. So where are we here in the current cycle? And I maintain that the technical bull that Wall Street signaled for the globe back in March of 2003, and some markets were starting to head up just before that, is getting very long in the tooth. It's unusual for these to last more than 3 years, and this would be coming up 3 years end of February, early March. And I also maintain that the cyclical chances of a good shakeout next year are really quite high. And we've also seen some technical deterioration in some, but not all, stock market indices in the last few months. Well, really since October for the most part. So there are warning signs out there, but this does not look like a jump out of the plane and pull your parachute cord here just yet. I think the best case scenario, which I defined as the markets generally hold up reasonably well through the end of the year and into the first quarter of 2006, is still very much in with a chance, still very much on schedule, better than in with a chance. Now, I know there are a lot of people around who are a good deal more optimistic than I am about 2006, and of course the beauty of it all is we don't have to know who's right here today. We watch the charts, and if the charts start to deteriorate beyond some of the warning signs that we have seen recently, which are not enough to cause us to turn well, to take flight in my view, if they show more warning signs, then I certainly would not want to ignore those. An accumulation of evidence of technical deterioration for trends. If they don't show those signs, well then fine, we stay with it a bit longer. Now, there are two really big themes here that I've been plugging and plugging and plugging, and we're really talking about 3 years or so, and that is the industrial resources and precious metals, And that's the supply inelasticity meets rising demand story. And the other one has been emerging markets. And emerging markets always do extremely well during Wall Street's secular bull phases, as a great deal of US money as well as European money looks for better opportunities elsewhere. That doesn't mean that their own stock markets aren't doing reasonably well, but are they going to get the performance in an upswing that, say, we've seen with India over the same time period? Well, no, is the answer. Clearly not. Okay. Now, my own stance on these markets is that I'm probably going to ride out a what I suspect will be a sharper downdraft next year than we have seen really since March 2003. I'll probably ride it out in the things that I really like most, such as India, such as my Investec Global Energy fund, such as some of my precious metal positions. I may well, and other mining shares that that I have. But I'll wait to see what kind of signals I'm receiving from Wall Street and, of course, other markets before making that final decision. But that's my current thinking on this. And also, just so not to be frightening people, particularly new subscribers, when I talk about a bigger downdraft than we've certainly seen since March 2003 being a high probability for next year, that, in my view, would also create an absolutely marvelous buying opportunity. But it would be pretty scary if one had to, if one was riding it out. Nerves would be frayed for sure. And the ultimate tragedy, if we find ourselves riding something like that, is to stay with it and not be bailing out down near the bottom, as you can be sure plenty of people would do, because I'm not talking about subscribers, hopefully, but plenty of people in the investment community worldwide would do, because that's what usually happens. People come in late in the bull cycle and overstay and get out late and too near the bottom too often. That we do want to avoid at all costs. And in terms of favorites around the globe, well, I've said that energy is the most compelling of all the big bull market theme stories, and it's led by uranium, and that's the best of the energy stories in my view. Natural gas, I have often described as a better energy story than the crude oil, but the crude oil is a pretty good bull story for sure. And currently, though, coming off lows and showing signs that it may have completed, probably has completed a medium-term correction within its long-term secular bull market. Now, staying with this resources theme, you've heard endless, or seen, and I think also heard endless comments about sell copper and other metals because there it's a bubble, that's the top, it's all over. And people have been pretty well repeating some of these themes since 2003 onwards. And one of the reasons they've been saying that is because they've been looking in the rear view mirror too much and are still thinking about that very, very long secular bear market that didn't really end until 3, 4 years ago. And they're also of the view that this move is cyclical rather than secular. And my own view is that it's very much secular. Again, supply inelasticity meets rising demand, and the supply inelasticity story is chronic relative to what we've seen in previous decades, because there's less of the stuff around in terms of the industrial resources. And also because a lot of people say there's no inflation. Well, try telling that to a miner. Everything costs more. They can't find highly qualified engineers and mine workers. Those people, I was saying in a meeting with Bob Quartermain of Silver Standard Resources today, and some old codgers I know in the London financial community, saying that the miners, the mining engineers, and so on, they are today the equivalent of the software writers during 1998 and 19, I beg your pardon, 19, yes, 1998 and 1990. Let me start, yes, I got it right, and 1999. You remember back in 98 and 99 when software writers were commanding absolutely unbelievable salaries, young kids coming out of university getting 120 grand sterling or more to do all the rewriting. And today, well, they're in surplus. Now, right now, people, mining companies just can't find the qualified personnel, or not enough of them. They can't find, well, the steel costs so much more, and they can't find replacement tires for the huge dump trucks that they need. And they're in a long queue to get new trucks if they want to gear up. And then there are all the environmental problems that that they face and must contend with. So they haven't really been able to increase the supply anywhere near as much as they would have in previous cycles. So much of it was mothballed for so long, and now it's quite difficult for the reasons I just gave to get it all pumped up again. Supply will certainly increase, but will it increase as much as demand? I doubt it. I doubt it in terms of the secular trend. I'm not talking about on a month-by-month basis here. So that's a hugely important theme, and I've said enough about that. Now, in the emerging markets, the ones that interest me the most are those that have, well, it's really Asia that interests me most of all. At the top of my tree, and this has been the case for the last 2 years or more, India, my very favorite market for the very long time. India's got it all. I won't repeat all those points, or this will be the longest broadcast ever, and I don't want to save you from that. Now, second tier would be the resources producers, and that's markets such as Brazil, Russia. Both of these, though, big question marks regarding governance, particularly Russia. And governance is extremely important in emerging markets. China doesn't even register in that in terms of my emerging market interests here right now, way down at the bottom of the queue. Although the A shares do look like they're in a bottoming out base building phase, but it's likely to be very, very lengthy. The emerging markets that have done best have been the ones in the Middle Eastern countries and some of the North African countries. They've been catching the petrodollars, but those are genuine bubbles. Those are the only real bubbles today in stock markets. And these markets are selling at 50, 70 times earnings, and it's dangerous. And that will unravel someday very dramatically. I don't think it's likely to unravel until the petrodollars dry up. And at oil trading today here, a little bit below $60 a barrel, there's still plenty of petrodollars accumulating. So it may well keep that going for a while longer, and they bubbles can go on and become. Keep on inflating for years. It's not something I want to play. It's not something I wish to participate in. It's not that easy to participate in anyway. But I'm not going near that. And the other best performers overall have been the South American markets, mainly because of the resources. There's a big question mark there over governance as well. I've got a lot of left-wing regimes in the area, and Chavez from Venezuela is very anxious to export his very left-wing policies throughout the region, and because he's got the oil revenue, he's quite likely to have some success. So I'm cautious in that sphere. But Brazil certainly one of the most interesting ones because of the resources. I'm gonna pause for a moment and take just a quick drink because the voice is getting scratchy. Sorry about that. Back again, still a bit scratchy, but I will press on. My favorites, I've already mentioned, be the Asian emerging markets led by India. Among developed country markets, resources plays have to be high on the list. Among the industrial based developed country markets, Japan and Korea are my two top favorites. Germany comes a distant third. And that's pretty much it. They've covered the stock market area. Government bonds, I don't see a decent rally occurring until we get a serious downdraft in global stock markets. And when government bonds do get that knee-jerk response technical rally, that will set up a beautiful short-selling opportunity. Secular bear market, we are very likely to see, and you know the reasons for that. Tons of money sloshing around, all this liquidity sloshing around the system because no government wants a strong currency. They're all terrified about the deflationary effects of China and India, Vietnam, Brazil, other countries that are creating such competitive pressures in the manufacturing field. And governments also have got to help their countries pay these big energy bills, and so what better way to do that than to pump so much money around? You create more inflation than you actually get in the form of rising energy prices. Now you get those who are in denial, who say there is no inflation. Look at the headline figures. Well, if you believe those, you believe in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy. Lots of hedonics in the statistics, but there's no doubt that if you look around, you can find your pockets of deflation. So what? Your outgoings are not overwhelmingly influenced by shirts and other goods from China. It's the day-to-day bills you're having to pay. Look at your dry cleaning bills. Look at your insurance bills. Look at your heating bills. Look at restaurant bills. Look at the bills you pay for legal fees, for accountancy fees, just about anything that you're required to pay. Certainly anything on a month-to-month basis for households, inflation's pretty well going through the roof. You've got some of these costs in double-digit figures. Now, because the headline inflation is so low and the statistics are overweight in terms of reflecting a lot of things that are not necessarily part of the week-to-week household bills, governments are convinced that they can get away with an excessive amount of liquidity creation, and that's what they're doing, and that's what's flowing into so many of these markets. Well, why not flow into bonds overall? Well, because investors are tweaking to the inflationary risks that all that money involves. And so bonds come at the bottom of the ladder in terms of investments for dealing with that. Then look at the budget deficits. Look at the 50-year bonds that are being issued. If they want to issue 50-year government bonds, do we really want to buy them? They're only issuing 50-year government bonds because they know the yields, long-dated yields, are cheap today and are going to go higher. If they thought that bond yields were high and were going to come down, they'd only be issuing short-term debt. It's a no-brainer. Now, all that liquidity sloshing around the system is, of course, a fantastic story for precious metals. Precious metals are back big time on the international stage as alternative currencies. People are getting bored with currencies. What am I going to do? If I don't like the dollar, Am I going to buy the euro? Well, that's an experimental currency and highly suspect. I think even the strongest, most staunchest, I should say, Europhiles are now beginning to believe that as well. And or accept that, I should say. Am I going to go out and buy the yen with zero interest rate? Of course not. And again, we're getting the competitive devaluation through the printing mechanism. That's not wrenching these currencies around big time. The moves are really quite muted. Look at the charts. Just go into the library and look at the charts of gold and all the world's different currencies. And that the emphatic statement that they make is that gold is back very much as a monetary metal in the eyes of investors, and those who resist that conclusion or haven't yet reached that conclusion are losing out. I just heard today that very heavy demand's been coming from Japan. Well, the yen's been so weak. And then I get other people saying, well, wait a minute, peasants in, whether it's in Egypt or perhaps India, are no longer buying gold because the price has gone up too much. Well, what they did was very, very important 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, 15 years ago. Today, that's not what it's about. What it's about is all this liquidity sloshing around the system and the billions and billions and billions that are in holders of in the hands of the holders of petrodollars, in the hands of the hedge funds, in the hands of many, many other people, and in our hands, and we're buying the precious metals. Now, probably overextended, they've had such a good week. I would hardly be surprised to see a week of reaction and consolidation next week. Am I going to sell? No, but I raise some stops in here. So I'm not going to say yes. I'm going to guess this is an important top area and get out, but I have raised some stops up and may well see some positions taken out. Some stops are loose, some stops are a bit tighter. Nothing is jammed right up there. And what else to mention to you? I want to touch on that natural gas. That's the energy play that I like the most because of its volatility. It's a pretty hairy ride, but it's probably right up there equal or just behind silver in terms of my most profitable trading vehicle for this year. And it has been mighty profitable. I'd be delighted to see natural gas fall back in that chart closed week in here today. Upside failure off the new high. Industrial metals, tin's the one that interests me the most. That's pushing up steadily. I do like Inco. I'm probably going to pick up more Inco. Did I say tin? I hope I didn't. I meant nickel. Nickel's the one pushing up. And I'm probably going to buy some more Inco. Now, I think that's it. I'm probably overrunning, so I'll say have a fabulous weekend. I'm completing this audio at about 8:16. I have not yet completed comment of the day because I was away from the office until the mid-afternoon, but I will stay here and complete it. And have a splendid time. All the best. I'm sure we'll have a fun week next week as well. Bye-bye.